You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 33. You can almost make a case that any technology that comes along gets used by one side first, and then the other side learns how to beat them at their own game.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
All right, welcome, welcome. It's a good day. I'm not going to comment on the weather all the time. This is a weather show. But today had the best weather in New York City. I was out in Prospect Park, you know, which is a good place to be in New York City because it's kind of like being on open fields and, you know, you could smell fall coming. You could smell the leaves. It's nice and cool. It's like 65 degrees. It's just a perfect way to, I don't know, it's the perfect way to get your head on straight today. So before I get started talking about today's show, which I would characterize today's show as entertaining. I know I always say that it's a good show. You know, sometimes I say it's an interesting show. Sometimes I say it's an informative show. Sometimes I say that this show is really important. You know, this episode is all of these things, but today it's particularly entertaining, I think. So if you've been listening to The Local Maximum and you like this episode, this is a good one, in my opinion, to share on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. Even though we, like, scour those guys thoroughly in this episode, they actually won't stop you from sharing it. So that's a good thing. So I appreciate all of you who have been sharing The Local Maximum episodes and leaving 5-star reviews as it is. And I'm really happy with the quality of this show today, so I just thought I'd ask because this is a good one to share. So I don't ask every episode, for those of you who know. All right. So not because I don't like every episode, but because I don't want to ask you to share, you know, every single time. I know it's going to get old. So also, listen to the end of the show. I have an exciting announcement about The Local Maximum, so you'll get to hear about that. That'll be fun. All right. Let's start jumping into it. This is part two of my discussion with Aaron. Last week, we talked about my 6 weeks off and what I plan to do in those 6 weeks. And then after that, we recorded this next show, which you're about to hear. So that's 10 days ago, or I think 11 days ago, and this show is more of our usual thing to talk about current issues in the news. Now, yes, I know we've already covered bias and censorship, and this is kind of a continuation of that discussion. But today we get into the effect these things are having on our political system. So, you know, call it effect on our democracy, if you will. Maybe you could say the effect is having our democratic process and how we see emerging technology and these powerful tech companies affecting our political process in the near future. And, you know, when these companies are censoring people, shutting people out, important question is this the equivalent of a private business throwing out an unruly customer? Like, I go to Dunkin' Donuts, and sometimes people come in and bother me when I'm eating my egg and cheese wake-up wrap, and they actually don't get thrown out. They kind of stay there. But if Dunkin' Donuts did throw them out, then it's just a private business looking out for their customers. So is big tech doing that? Or are they trying to do the bidding of government or interest groups that are odds with their customer base? Or are they just so big and complicated that they can't do a good job of this? These are important questions to ask and things that we want to wrap our heads around. So let's get into it. Ads, bias, censorship, democracy, my only 4-part title. All right, Aaron, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back again.
Yes, this has been the fastest turnaround time between recording of podcast shows that we've ever had in the program. I think it clocks in at, what, 20, 30 seconds, something like that?
Well, through the miracle of podcasting and audio editing, it'll seem much longer to our listeners.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so there are a few articles that we want to discuss today that are related to... It's always good to, like, go back and talk about some of the issues that are occurring today and to relate them back to some of the past issues that we've been discussing on the program. So first of all, let's talk about this Make Me Smart podcast. You're into that podcast, right? You listen to it quite regularly?
Yeah,
because this is the first that
I am a regular listener, and I don't know if I went back and listened to everything from the beginning because they kind of had a pre-launch period, but I'm fairly certain I've heard all of their regular episodes in the last I think they're in season two of it now.
So it actually sounds very good, but this is the first I'm hearing of it. And you recommended it to me because you said in this particular episode, you know, they were basically saying, they were confirming everything that I said. And if I like one thing, I love people who confirm everything that I said. So,
it's a very human weakness.
Yes. Yes. So they were talking about Facebook and Twitter and the bias that is inherent in all these companies. I don't know. Do you want to kind of summarize what they said, or should I?
So you give it a spin, and I'll see if there's anything I need to fill in there.
So they were really saying that these companies were kind of saying, okay, we're going to solve these problems. And these problems is actually a very broad set of problems that are quite different from each other, because there's fake news, there's trolling, there's hate speech, there's spam, there's all sorts of let's say attacks on these networks that we're kind of all lumping together as bad content or problematic content. And the leaders of these companies, who I think actually sometimes the engineers really know what needs to be done, and then some of the leadership don't really understand social networks as much, like the which is, you know, it kind of kind of scary that, you know, but actually it's probably true in most tech companies. The leadership of the company don't understand the technology or the social aspects of it as much as the engineers and the people working in the trenches do. But they often say, oh, we're going to use machine learning and we're going to solve these problems, and it'll all be good in like 5 to 10 years. And I think what Make Me Smart is pointed out, like, no, your problem is not a machine learning problem. It's not a problem of we're just, our algorithms aren't smart enough. Our problem is that our people are biased, and not just political bias. It could be, you could be biased in many ways. It's just biased to how the people at your company think, or how they, or what they don't think about. As I mentioned, you know, there's QA bias, which is the stuff that you're not thinking about as a company is always, you know, passing through the cracks, whereas the things that you do think about, you will fix. So yeah, I thought that was spot on.
Yeah. I think two things. One, you mentioned that, you know, often the leadership is a little bit out of touch of how these things actually work in a technical sense. And in a lot of places, I think that's very true. I think it's harder to make that argument at like a Facebook, though, because Zuckerberg has kind of been in the trenches from the beginning. But one of the things that I think the hosts on Make Me Smart have...
Yeah, but he's so distant from it now.
Well, yeah. And yeah. One of the points they've kind of made on a recurring basis is, does Zuckerberg really understand what Facebook has evolved into and what its role is? And the conclusion they seem to keep coming to is no, he doesn't really have a good grasp on it, and it's kind of a beast out of control. And yeah. I think that may be very much the case in a lot of these large tech companies, social media empires, that they've created something they don't entirely know how to control, or are uncomfortable with the ideas of how to control it.
But there's the founder CEO, but yeah, I mean, look, the company leadership has all sorts of functions into it, and this is normal and probably expected, but there's marketing, there's sales, there's not everyone's going to understand, it's public relations. Not everyone is going to have the same understanding of the system as everyone else. But yeah, I think that it's so complicated. Any of these systems is so complicated that no one person can understand it completely. And we know even in the small case of Foursquare, that's true. So in these bigger cases, it must be true times 100.
Yeah. And a big part of it is that they're so unwilling to admit that there are biases there, because bias is such a... to use the term is a trap, because admitting that there's bias doesn't make you evil. But if there is bias and you're denying it's there, then that makes you kind of, I hate to use the term complicit, because that's got so many other connotations.
I feel like, yeah, no, I feel like if you say you're biased, it's like, oh, you're biased. Okay. That means you have to listen to, so, like, oh, if you're biased, that means you have to listen to the government almost, or you have to listen to like these outside consultants because you're biased. And that's not the point, because the people that you'd be listening to are also biased.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think of the old Monty Python bit. Wait.
Like, I feel like, can I just, oh, go
I
ahead,
was going to say, there's the bit, you know, see the violence.
Far be it from me to interrupt a Monty Python reference.
You can see the violence inherent in the system. And I think the response here is you can see the bias inherent in the system. And because it's there, that it's virtually impossible to build a system that doesn't have biases. But if you refuse to acknowledge that they exist, then you can't, you know, take them into consideration and account and use that as part of your of how you consume that information.
I guess the problem for me is if they do admit they're biased and they say, oh, we admit it, we're biased, so don't worry, we're going to fix this. We're going to hire a consultant and, you know, things are going to be good. And then it's like, no, you're totally missing the point. You're always going to be biased, you know? And so that's why I'm working on this subjective tagging system, at least a prototype during my sabbatical, to try to build something that, you know, assumes that everyone has bias and tries to reconcile that and tries to assume that certain tags are subjective, and then it kind of helps you fall into the area that you think is subjectively right. But that's not the approach that these companies are taking. Although I have seen some quotes from Twitter that was the episode I recorded from Belfast, the one that was about the great Twitter purge. We spoke about how one of the engineers, was it an engineer or was it someone else? I don't know what it was, but one of the quotes from the article suggested that they did get it. And then all the other quotes suggested that they did not get it. And so it's like, you know, it's even
they
if
they found somebody that hadn't been briefed by the PR department on what to say.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's the problem, right? If somebody comes up with an idea, you never know what's going to get implemented. It's always, I mean, essentially it's up to the engineers who implement it and, you know, who they're going to be pushed around by. So we'll see.
Yeah. I think this harkens back to something that we talked about a little bit before. I think it was around the time of the first round of, Facebook congressional testimonies with how to fix some of these issues. And a lot of times it was implementing a kind of a patch to how the algorithm works. And the example that they called out specifically, I think it was their guest on the show, was talking about a Google search several years back where you typed in I think it was if you were searching from the for something about the Holocaust, and the first autocomplete option that came up was Holocaust never really happened. And
yeah, and I've ran into many more people online who believe that than I would have liked.
And so when that was brought to Google's attention, they quote unquote fixed it. But the way they fixed it was that they just patched it so that particular, you know, set of autocompletes didn't pop up first anymore. But they didn't actually change the underlying process that had resulted in those getting fed up, you know, through the chain. So it's not going to prevent that type of problem from happening in a slightly different but perhaps similar situation.
I mean, that's totally the startup culture, right? If something looks bad, I will fully admit we've done this thing at Foursquare a lot. If some result looks bad, then we simply have some special cases to make it not look as bad, so we're not embarrassed.
Because sometimes you need a quick solution, and
yeah, we don't think about the underlying problem. But these companies are so big, so mature that they should be focused on the underlying problem at this point.
Yeah, it opens a lot of kind of Pandora's boxes, but we'd like to think we deserve better.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the next article. Related, all of these are related, actually. And this is from the MIT Technology Review, Why the Pessimists Are Winning for Now. Did you get a chance to read this one?
I did. So uh, the the current issue of the Technology Review is actually their politics issue. And so it talks a lot about social media and technology and how one of their big thrusts is what looked so great back in the Arab Spring and kind of that era, and we thought was going to revolutionize the world, and how it has failed so utterly and not only didn't give us the results we want, but it's kind of being turned around and used for the very opposite of what we thought it would. So the link there is to, I think, the editor's kind of the letter from the editor that kicks off that issue. But I'm still working my way through it, but there is a lot in there, and I've been reading through it with a highlighter, calling out some key passages that I want to bring up on a future episode. So this can almost be a teaser to some deeper stuff we can get into there. Because as they point out in the article, they are just as guilty as everybody else of having thought that this was the next best, greatest thing, that, you know, like I said, the Arab Spring, that this was going to, you know, Twitter was going to bring democracy and revolution to totalitarian regimes. And then, as we've talked about before, that the Obama campaign's use of internet savvy and social media and in particular Facebook was going to revolutionize political involvement and how campaigning works in America. And they were right on that, but they were not right in the way they thought they were in a post-2016 world.
Well, let's look at this from the perspective of somebody who's a big fan of President Obama and really can't stand President Trump. Let's say, get into that mindset for a second. There may be a few people who think that way. So more than a few, basically everyone in the industry and everyone who's writing this stuff. It seems to me you've got to put forth the hypothesis, maybe I'm wrong here, that in 2008, 2012, big data is the savior of democracy. And then in 2016, this same technology is destroying democracy. Is this just a matter of, well, when it elects my guy, it's good. When it elects someone else, it's destroying the whole system. Is it not that? Is it something deeper than that? I mean, I hope it's not that shallow.
I think there's a certain element of kind of first to the pole here, using that term in the racing sense, not the political polling sense, that if you figure out how to use this new technology first and best, then you need to make sure that you use it first and best so overwhelmingly that you secure your advantages for longevity, because it's only a matter of time before the quote unquote, the other side figures out how to use it to their advantage as well. And in a least dramatic scenario, they level the playing field. But in what we may have seen in 2016 is that they can swing the pendulum back their way, and they've found a way to use it even better than you did the time before.
Yeah.
And we've seen that, there's one of the articles I've read so far is looking at the Arab Spring side, that there are these countries in the kind of Southwest Asia and the Middle East region where the totalitarian regimes were kind of on the ropes because of these protesters organizing over Twitter, but they have found ways to use Facebook and Twitter and social media to now more effectively persecute the political dissidents in their country and those who've been exiled abroad.
So couldn't it be said that this is the same for any piece of technology, particularly communications technologies out there? It could be used for good and bad. It's just a tool. Just to give some examples from American political history, like talk about radio. I love radio. You know, Republicans were very effective, I believe, at using radio in the 1920s. In the 1920s, got elected by huge margins. FDR comes along, beats them at their own game. You could think of JFK. He looks good on TV. Ronald Reagan comes from TV. 20 years later, he sweeps it. You know, so this hasn't, I feel like you can almost make a case that any technology that comes along gets used by one side first, and then the other side learns how to beat them at their own game. And it's happened both one in one direction and the other, with one party figuring out before. But it doesn't matter who figures it out. It's, you know, our political system is adversarial. So whatever tools are at their disposal, both sides are going to end up using, and it does reach equilibrium. Like it or not, that's the system. I mean, that's the way our democracy has always worked. So it's, I don't see that it's being destroyed. You might like the way it works and you want to change it, but like it seems like it's working the same way as things are playing out the same way they have throughout history.
It may seem like the, and this is something that's been brought up in the context of politics in general, but it may seem like the oscillations are getting more and more severe. So it's kind of a, not a positive feedback system, but there's energy being imparted to the pendulum somehow that is not originally present.
So I don't know if I agree with that though, because is it like, I mean, that's the feeling, I guess, but like, so it's certainly not more severe.
I don't have statistics to back that up.
It's certainly not more severe in terms of numbers. Like for the United States, we're still like a 50-50 country, and we're not getting these huge landslides that we used to at previous times in our history. Now, you might say it's more extreme in terms of the political ideologies are getting more extreme, but you could point to other times in history.
There could be an argument to be made that the lack of landslide elections is actually a sign that we are becoming more extreme, in that there are no longer centrist candidates who can secure a landslide number of votes or number of electoral college votes. And so what appears to be a more even split is actually more, well, I guess more polarized and more extreme are not necessarily the same thing, although it seems they are linked in the current situation.
Yeah. That is a hypothesis that I can kind of get behind. I can kind of see where that comes from. I think that could be right. Now, I also want to point out, so one of the tools that's being used is this targeted advertising. And that's sort of what we're talking about, that both campaigns have used. People around the world are using it, particularly on Facebook, very controversial. Now, as an insider working on ads for a little bit, I'm actually shocked. People have this idea that we have a down to a science as to how, like, we know who we're targeting and we know how we're going to change their mind. And it turns out that this is not a science at all. As I talked about yesterday in causality, we have no idea whether any particular ads changed anyone's mind in the election. There are no good studies on that. No proofs of that. And we even know with Facebook, I was reading an article the other day how Facebook says they have more people they can target that are in the United States that are like their number of people that they could target in the United States are more than the people in the United States. I'll have to bring that up. But like half the time when they tell you, oh, here's a person who lives in New York and went to this school and goes to Starbucks regularly and buys lots of shoes, it's not always true. They don't know. And so sometimes advertisers, and we see this all the time, advertisers do try to target one group, and they don't target based on science. They target based on intuition, which is the best you can do. And not that that doesn't work. I mean, look, if I'm selling shoes, I want to sell to people who buy lots of shoes or are willing to spend more on shoes, you know, and depending on what kind of shoes they are. If they're expensive shoes, I want to sell to people who have a little extra income, you know. So they do use intuition, but that's all. It's not scientifically based. And sometimes they screw up. Sometimes they think they're targeting one group and it ends up not working, either because their intuition was wrong or because the group that they said were being targeted, it wasn't actually being targeted. So it's totally, it's not like a Batman all-seeing eye God mode type thing. There's still bumbling around, which is a good way to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a silver bullet or you know a surgical precision application, but it is a huge step beyond the previous method, which was kind of generating a message that you could broadcast wide, and that you would expect pretty much everyone from both sides is going to see this. So you have to make sure that it appeals to the widest swath there, and also doesn't have doesn't drive away as many people as possible. But if you can segment that a little bit, not only can you tailor your message a little bit more, but in a world where advertising dollars are in many ways considered the equivalent of speech, and the more dollars is the more volume and the more effective that speech is going to be, you want to make sure you're using that most effectively. And so by targeting those who you think are most likely to be receptive to your message, that's much more efficient than taking that same message and just pumping it out to everybody, whether it's on network television or primetime radio. And, a huge chunk of that audience is just going to kind of tune you out.
Yeah. But as we sit here in 2018, we've gone from completely random spraying out your message to bumbled targeting, which is still a huge step forward from the advertiser's perspective. But we're not in this general AI thing yet where, we know how to create an agent to say exactly what needs to be said to convince you of something. That's not people don't know how to do that.
That brings to mind an interesting question that came up in my personal life. I guess it was about a week ago, week and a half ago. So we had our primaries here in Massachusetts.
We had ours on Thursday.
Excellent. Did you vote?
13th. No, there was no one to vote for.
Oh, well, that's a little disappointing. So Massachusetts has a system which it may differ from a number of other states, but in Massachusetts, if you are what they consider unenrolled, which means you are registered to vote, but you are not a registered member of one of the political parties, then you get to choose which ballot you would like to vote on at the primary. And so I fall into that category. So I showed up at the primary and I had the option. I could select the Democratic ballot, the Libertarian ballot. And I don't think there was a green rainbow party this year, but
I wasn't registered Democrat, which I needed to be, in order to vote on the contentious Cuomo versus Cynthia Nixon. But that wasn't even worth it. I mean, they weren't even close.
The question that I have is so when I show up, they do the thing where they ask you what street you live on, and they check, they look up your name and they check you off, to confirm that you are indeed a registered voter in that precinct. And when they saw I was unenrolled, they asked which ballot I would like. And I told them which one, and they wrote down a note next to my name saying which ballot I took. And they did the same thing after I voted, when I fed my paper ballot into the machine, and they said, okay, which ballot did you take? And they noted it down next to my name that I checked out. I was really curious, who has access to that information? Because in a state like Massachusetts, where I don't know if it's that unenrolled is the largest single group of voters, or if it's that unenrolled is more than Republicans and Democrats registered combined. But either way, unenrolled is a huge portion of the electorate in Massachusetts. But if you were able to tell not only what percentage of those unenrolled people voted on a Democratic ballot versus a Republican ballot, but also to know exactly which people voted on those ballots, that could be quite valuable information come the general election or come redistricting or any number of things there. And I didn't realize necessarily that information might be available. And it's entirely possible that this isn't. It might be that they use those only for the purposes of making sure that the same number of Republican ballots and Democrat ballots that came in went out, and then they destroy those paper records after the election. But I'm not entirely sure.
That's scary. That's not how
so they don't know who I voted for, because they can't pair. Except for the 10 people who voted on the Libertarian ballot in my town, they probably have a pretty good idea exactly how they voted, because there's only 10 of them. So they don't know.
I voted in some very small elections before where I've changed the outcome.
But,
though. but I'll talk
about it. But knowing which party's ballot I selected could be very useful and influential information. And I personally don't know how that information is protected or who it is available to. So,
I mean, back before we had the scanned in ballots, back in 2006, I believe, was the first year I voted in New York, and it was the old machines,
with the big lever.
It looked like it was built in like 1890 or something. You're like, clunk. And so I wrote some people in, and I noticed, and I was very careful with who I wrote in. Essentially, I just wrote in friends of mine for judge, since those were un. So the way it works in New York is you vote on judge, but there's only one option. So I was like, you know what? I'll just write in people, and yeah, it'll be fun. And I noticed that they permuted my votes when the ballots came in because they write down who got write-in votes. And so I'm like, well, my vote was counted wrong. There's proof. At least there's proof for me. But mistakes do happen all the time. So where are we going with this? We don't know how to target ads, and we don't know how to vote.
Yeah, we were talking about how precise these actually are, and that they're better than they used to be, but it's not as foolproof as some people have maybe made it sound.
Yeah, and it's very tough to say, these ads caused this. I think a lot of people tend to think that way, and it's just not.
And like you were talking about on last, or maybe it's 2 weeks ago, the episode on causality. Yeah. It's hard to even design an experiment or an observational study that would allow you to confirm that.
Right.
You can get a lot of correlation and maybe draw some conclusions based on that, but causality is a much harder bridge to cross.
Yeah. Okay. So another thing in this MIT article that I wanted to point out is they say that when people get into these groups, the extremists tend to be much louder, and so that could be a problem. But they also say that people have found that certain rules in these communities can kind of encourage people to form consensus. It wasn't very specific, but I kind of agree. So that's just from my intuition. I also want to point out that sometimes the people who are correct are a minority, and they tend to be loud too. And so that could be a good thing in the long run. Like, it could help us reach the truth longer. I'm not saying it's like you said, like the whole Holocaust denial people are also very loud. But I don't know. Maybe
extremism is usually shorthand for being wrong, but it's not in inherently so.
Right,
you can be an extremist on a position and very much be correct.
Right.
We've seen plenty of examples counter to that. So that's kind of where our mental shorthand goes first.
But. Yeah. And then, so they do have a link to a visualization of the so-called filter bubble. And even if in their own visualization, I found it is not a bubble. It is all mixed up. Like, you see people and they divided it out by political group, and you see people all mixed up all over the place. So I think people come across different points of views. Some of the points of views we come across are annoying and waste my time. I get it. But I don't think filter bubble is a very helpful term, actually, at this point.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if it was one of the articles in the Technology Review or if it was a discussion on Make Me Smart, but I've seen a couple of things in the last week or two talking about how the idea of the filter bubble, the bubble exists, but it's not the way we think it is. That people are actually being exposed to a wider range of ideas, but they're just not. And we've talked before about how the way you're exposed to an idea, especially if it's counter to your current your beliefs, your priors. Psychologically, that influences how you're going to react to it, whether you're going to dig in against it or whether it'll kind of move the needle. And I think they're saying that we're exposed to more diverse ideas, but they tend to serve the purpose of only further confirming our pre-existing beliefs.
Yeah. That person's so crazy. Might as well just stay away.
There was something else as well about how the issue with the bubble isn't so much that we're only hearing one idea. It's that when we talk amongst people who share our ideas, we tend to shift more towards the extreme in that kind of subconsciously. And I need to do more reading on that to fully understand what's going on there.
See, I find something different. Maybe I'm alone in this, but I find that when I find like-minded people on one issue and I say, oh, these people are sane on this one issue, those same people can be totally insane on other issues, that other areas of life. And so that maybe helps me get out of my filter bubble a little bit. Maybe I just have views that don't often go together, but I do feel like I'm not always agreeing with the same people, and that sort of changes my, you know, my experiences when I'm talking to people. If that makes any sense.
It kind of makes me think of the Gell-Mann the Gell-Mann amnesia effect, that in essence, if you know a lot about a subject, then you can easily identify where people are right and where people are wrong on it. But when it gets out of your area of expertise, you no longer have the ability to make that distinction. And so based on what they've said in other completely unrelated areas, you may tend to believe or not believe them, even if it's not directly applicable. That's I'm somewhat bastardizing it there, but it kind of goes along with I agree with these people on this particular topic. They make sense there, doesn't always correlate to, and so therefore we will agree on this even adjacent topic, if not completely unrelated one.
Yeah, I've been burned on that so many times. So I don't think that way anymore. Okay, so I think the main takeaway from there, and the thing that I want the audience to think about, get back to us, localmaxradio@gmail.com. Are these inherently technology problems, or are they democracy problems? Thinking homework. Okay, can we end this with me ranting about Facebook again?
Open the floodgates. This is going to be a different kind of rant, though, than what we've heard in the past.
This time, it's personal. No, because I'll tell you, I've been trying. So what I've been doing on Facebook is I'm trying to get a sense of the ad system. So I started the Facebook page for the Local Maximum, and I've promoted some of the shows that we've had. Not huge amounts of money, like $10 or $20 a show, to try to see, you know, what the click rate is and what the return on investment is, and just to try to get a sense of the system, right? And so they wouldn't let me, they rejected my ad for my interview with Clyde Vanell, because they said it was a political advertisement. Now, let me ask you a question, because I talked to this assemblyman. Maybe I talked to him about a few proposals that were before the assembly. I talked to him about technology. I didn't mention his political party. We didn't talk about whether he's running for re-election, who he's running against, or I don't even know if he's running for re-election. We didn't talk about any of that stuff. And I feel like this is not the type of thing that they should disallow. This is not what they are intending to go after, and yet they're going after it. Now, I could apply to show political ads. And so I did that. So they required my social security number. They required a picture of my driver's license front and back. And then they sent me a letter through the mail. So I had to wait like 3 days and then enter the password from the letter. And then they said, oh, now you have to have on the bottom of the advertisement, paid for blank, fill in the blank and tell us who is paying for this advertisement. So I said, paid for by Max Sklar. That's going to be embarrassing, right? And then so now they just got back to me and said, we reject that tagline. I'm like, but that's the most accurate one that you can have.
No, so, they want you to create a shell corporation based out of the Cayman Islands. And then that, you know, the Committee for Maximum Locality can pay for this ad.
Yeah. So I thought about it. Are these campaign finance laws, or is this a private decision by Facebook? And it's really murky in this case, because it's something that Facebook is doing to kind of, I don't know if it's to appease the government or if it's to like to appease, you know, after they brought Mark Zuckerberg in, or if it's, I mean, they actually started doing this stuff before.
I would imagine that it has more to do with kind of public backlash as opposed to any active government regulation being enforced. But yeah, campaign finance is way out of my area of expertise. I have no personal experience there. Although I'm curious if...
I've got to say, though, going through this, like, I do feel like my right to speak is violated in a small way, but a very annoying and personal way for me through this system that just it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, well, and with the caveat that Facebook has no requirement to provide you a platform for speech.
Sure.
If the reason that they are enforcing this, if this is regulations and requirements directly handed down from the U.S. government, if it's a piece of law, then that is ostensibly the government.
It's interesting. Because they did say this is U.S. only policy.
Hmm.
So that is interesting to me, and it's also interesting. I mean, there are campaign finance laws. Like, I can't just put up an ad for someone's campaign, but this is in no way an ad for someone's campaign, and so I think this does have to do with campaign finance laws they're trying not to violate. And instead, it just ends up, violating, affecting my ability to get my content out of
there. So my question would be, how did this get flagged or raised? I'm guessing it was automated, that it probably had to do with the fact that Clyde's name came up, that caused it to pop. Now, when they reviewed it, I would be willing to bet dollars to donuts that the person did not listen to the episode. It probably just at your ad, copy, and so the act. So I
guess it's probably
a big question
a
there.
Very low level person.
What is the content of the ad? The text and images that post in the ad, or because the ad contains a link to the episode, is the episode part of the content of the ad?
Well, right, and does that raises the question if I present any political opinion whatsoever on my shows, does that mean that I can't advertise them? I mean, that sounds insane to me.
Well, this gets into the campaign finance law questions. I believe.
I mean, if I could look at the ad directly, right? Let me see what the ad itself says, right? Let me pull this.
While you're looking for that, I was just thinking.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot more leeway on what's I guess commonly referred to as issue ads, which don't explicitly support or detract a particular candidate, but they talk about a particular issue. So in the last election, you could have an immigration issue ad that never once mentioned the name of Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And because of that, it kind of falls into a completely different category of speech. But of course, the minute you start calling out candidates by name, then that's a different, a horse of a different color. And now you didn't do either in this ad, I expect, but.
No, here's what the ad says. Check out my interview with New York State Assembly member Clyde Vanell. We cover Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain for, I spelled cryptocurrency wrong. I better change that. Blockchain for personal records, automation, entrepreneurship, 3D printing, and the Rubik's Cube. And then a link to my show notes page. And then just a bunch of pictures of us talking in his office.
Presumably the same pictures that you posted on the show notes page. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that it was just the fact that it had Assemblyman Vanell's name in it. That's what triggered it. Now, why it didn't get de-escalated at the human review level is a little bit surprising to me.
Yeah, and I don't know if this paid for by Max Sklar thing is going to work. I'm not sure if they rejected it or if they simply haven't accepted it yet. So we'll see. Maybe by the time this episode is out, we'll find out. So I'll have to talk about it before or after. But man, it just goes to show. And another thing to think about on this issue is, let's say it's 10, 20 years in the future and we've successfully decentralized these platforms. Okay. And now you could use cryptocurrency to pay for ads that is unstoppable. Think about what the implications of that. Some people are going to be really upset by that development, but I think it's almost inevitable that you'll have the free flow of information and the free paid flow of information with no government control, essentially making all campaign finance laws ineffective, which will have a huge effect on politics, you know, forever. I don't want to, that could be a whole show of speculation, but definitely something to think about.
This talk of decentralized platforms makes me think of another platform I heard a little bit about not that long ago. And I don't think this is technically decentralized, but it was very much in response to restrictions from some of the mainstream platforms. In response to, I guess, Patreon and Kickstarter becoming more selective about what content they would allow to be posted or hosted there. And that was the release of Hatreon, which I don't know if we've mentioned Cody Wilson's name in passing episodes, but we've definitely talked about the 3D printed firearm topic in some very cursory detail. But this was one of his other projects, Hatreon.
Hatreon was for a Patreon for hate speech, essentially.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the concept was we will host those who are not, who the other sites are unwilling to host, and as a result, it became kind of a hive of alt-right and similar programs because you wouldn't have a reason to go there if you could use the more mainstream options, but the idea of having alternates, especially in a world where Twitter or YouTube or Facebook are booting some subgroups and thinking maybe more in a kind of Great Firewall of China situation or in some other totalitarian regimes where these companies have cut deals with an abusive government and so your dissident group may not be able to use that resource. Having an alternate platform that is unwilling to play by those same rules might be a good path for us to support.
I'd rather live in a world where, people have a voice that I don't necessarily agree with or like, than a world where, voices can be, shut down at will by.
Yeah. And the Hatreon story it came to a pretty quick end after it started, because I think Visa, pulled their credit card processing services. So, they solved the issue of Kickstarter and Patreon not willing to host. They got around that, but then there's underlying
cryptocurrency
that also, and that's I think cryptocurrency has been a big piece of how he's funding his current defense distributed business, is that he's partnered up with several crypto related groups.
I actually went to a debate on gun control last night. It was at something called the Soho Forum it actually wasn't in Soho because it was north of Houston. It was NoHo, but it's called the Soho Forum, and they host a bunch of debates here in New York City, which are pretty interesting. And it was a gun control debate, pro and con, last night. And both sides, it was actually one of those debates where both sides were actually pretty moderate. So they were debate like the anti-gun control guy supported background checks, and the pro-gun control guy conceded that, you know, sometimes I'm not trying to, like, I'm against the total ban, and you know, sometimes people have, so it was sort of a debate between, you know, so it's interesting, but I had a feeling that people in the audience were much more radical. And one of the things that come up were 3D printed guns, and they made the point that those are much more symbolic right now of, haha, we can do this without anyone asking. But in reality, you probably wouldn't want to use one for anything that, you probably wouldn't actually want to use a 3D gun over a
There's some stat about, you know, the files have been downloaded millions of times since they were originally released. Yeah. And I would expect the number of people who actually take those files and attempt to construct a 3D printed firearm out of them, never mind the small percentage of those that do so successfully, that it's going to be minuscule.
I mean, it's not like it just comes out and there's your gun. It's hard to get these things right. And they said, you shoot it and like the whole thing melts.
We've been spoiled by...
it's plastic. It's a plastic gun. My regular printer doesn't even work.
Yeah, PC load letter. Am I right? There's a whole generation that doesn't even know what I'm talking about there. But enough about picking on the youngins. Yeah. We are spoiled by having grown up in a world where, you know, kind of Star Trek: The Next Generation and the Replicator were in our, you know, collective conscious, that we expect the world of 3D printing is you say, you know, tea Earl Grey hot, and boop, it goes, you know, makes some noises and it materializes there fully formed and steaming. And 3D printing as a whole is not there yet, and certainly not for the 3D printed plastic gun.
Yeah, I mean, it may be one day, but certainly not, that day is not today. Okay, so yeah,
we've drifted pretty far afield there for a Facebook rant about political speech, but
yeah. So let's wrap up a little bit. Pushback question that someone could ask me, because, you know, doesn't Foursquare ban political ads? And the answer is yes, we do. And does Foursquare also use the apps to promote political opinions that its leadership likes? Yes, unfortunately, it does. So I don't run the company. Nor do I
have an interesting follow-up question to that. Yeah. And maybe this is all publicly available, or maybe it'll take some homework on your part to look into internally. But It's simple enough for Foursquare to say they ban political ads. How do they determine what's a political ad? What is their criteria?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think so. They don't ban political ads in general. It's just that there is let's say it's a swarm.
It's a general policy stance.
Yeah. No, it's not like any political ad is gone. It's like an ad that's going to annoy you when you check in to get your cup of coffee is. Like, I don't know if you're let's say you check in and get your cup of coffee, and then like Alex Jones appears on the screen and rips off his shirt and starts complaining about the demons controlling the country. You might not want to see that when you go to your morning coffee. So, you know,
it depends how much Foursquare knows about me and whether they can judge that that's the type of thing I'd be interested in.
Yeah. And anything that's a little bit too I believe at some point we hosted candidate ads, although I'm not sure. It's not a big thing. Most of the ads that have been contentious that we've taken off, and this is just my impression, so it might not be 100% right, but a lot of the ads that we really didn't like came from Facebook. So Facebook has an ad server or an ad exchange that we use, and sometimes the worst ads come from that, which is why I'm so annoyed that they won't accept my ad because they have all these crappy ads that they're spouting out all over the internet.
I'm trying to remember the last set of ads I saw on Swarm, and these probably aren't the most recent, but the only ones I can remember were for I think it was linking to tracks from a new new music album that had just been released.
Yeah.
And so there was a campaign based around that because I got the same, if not similar ads for
right.
a while.
That's fine. That's fine. Pandora used to have really annoying ads. I don't know if they got maybe slightly less annoying, but they used to have, if I remember correctly, they used to have like those pickup artists in there. Like that, would, you'd be listening to your music and they'd be like, you know, I sleep with a different woman every night and you can read my method and then you can do it too. And it's like, I don't want to listen to this, you know, while I'm just trying to listen to my music. Now, the lyrics of my music are probably worse than...
Nobody listens to the lyrics though.
Yeah, that's not the point. But no, I mean, they still have a lot of annoying ads on there. I don't know why they don't.
Well, and I think we've talked about Pandora and the business model and advertising a little bit before, but one thing that I think they've done right for cheapskates like me who are not willing to pony up the money for a subscription yet is almost invariably when I start playing something in Pandora on my phone, at least, I don't know if it does it in the web app, but it'll ask, this isn't Pandora. I'm mixing it up with Spotify. Spotify does this. It says, okay, would you like to watch this ad? And in exchange, we'll give you 30 uninterrupted minutes of music. And usually, if I'm doing this on my phone, I was like, sure, I'll leave my phone on the table while I walk into the other room and, you know, go grab something to drink. And when I come back, the ad is done and I'm good to go. Because that's
sounds reasonable.
I prefer that to, you know, in between two songs I'm listening to get an ad about, you know, the local car dealership or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to get someone from Spotify on the show. They've been doing some really interesting things.
Now, is Spotify located near you guys? They have an office nearby?
Yes, they do. So they are, I think they're New York based, but they definitely have one of their big offices here, near the Foursquare office.
Cool.
So yeah. All right. I think that's enough for today. We've gone on for quite a long time. I think I got out everything I wanted to say. Was that any last words? Any last questions?
Well, I definitely need to read some more of that technology review, the political issue, and yeah. I definitely want to loop back on some of those because I was going through there with a highlighter because there were some things in there that I thought, oh, right on. And there were some things I saw that said, I'm not sure I agree with that. I'm curious about their methods. So I think that would make for some interesting discussion.
All right, great. So we'll circle back on that in a future episode. All right, that's a wrap. I think that's a wrap.
Cool.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Aaron, for coming on the show today. It's been a long day, and I really appreciate it. So
my pleasure.
All right. So sometimes some of my interviews, I can wait a few weeks before publishing the interview. So, you know, I interview someone today and then I'll say, okay, your Local Maximum interview will come out in a few weeks. But look at what happens when I do a current events driven show like this and then wait only 11 days to put it out. It's like everything we spoke about has been in the news and in some cases very unexpectedly. So since this is now September 24th, probably September 25th by the time you download this, I need to give a few updates as there are elephants in the room as you'll be listening to this. So starting with the easy one, whatever happened with my ad for Clyde Vanell's interview? Did I get that sorted out? No, turns out still rejected. This time, you know, I got certified to put out political content, so I can actually do that now, because I went through their whole rigmarole. But they said that I can't promote certain volatile financial instruments such as Bitcoin on the Facebook platform. And I told them, I'm not promoting it. I'm not telling people to use a service. I'm not hawking some wallet or some ICO or anything like that. I'm not telling people what to do financially. I'm not selling a product. I'm just discussing and learning about the technology and trying to educate the public and talk about, you know, important issues surrounding this emerging industry. So it seems like, in my opinion, this is in the public interest to get this out. So I appealed the decision. And what did they say when I appealed the decision? Someone looked at it for 10 seconds and said, yeah, no, you can't run your ad. So I asked, what if I take out the word Bitcoin? And they said, our decision stands. So it's so bad. You know, not only do they keep rejecting you, but then they keep on mentioning an appeals process to give you a little bit of hope and suck up your time, and then they crush you again. So jerks. So now on to the public news. We talked about Cody Wilson at the end of this episode. He's the one going around saying that we can print as many guns as we want. The government isn't going to stop us. And with Hatreon, it was, you know, we can move money and we can try to get around the gatekeepers for funding projects. Of course, it was Visa, one of the gatekeepers, that stopped them in that. But people will keep trying. So in the 11 days since we recorded the episode, Cody Wilson has been charged with a very serious crime in Texas, I believe. He was out of the country at the time, but is currently back out on bail and is going to mount a defense. We always have to remember that being arrested and charged with a crime is not synonymous with guilt of that crime. And when there are so many people who are interested in stopping Mr. Wilson and his various enterprises, you know, these need to be looked at skeptically. So, scary thought, but history shows that people are not above this. So I'll say is that I hope that our justice system does what it's supposed to do in this case and gets to the truth of it. And finally, also within the 11-day window, we were talking about Pandora ads and their business model and all that, and maybe we were going to discuss it further. Well, now we have to just rewrite the story on this because, you know, it was recently announced that Sirius XM, at Sirius Satellite Radio, is going to buy Pandora for $3.5 billion. So maybe this values a Pandora share at a little less than it was in its heyday a few years ago, but this is by no means a fire sale. This is a big bet on streaming music and a big acquisition. So congrats to all the employees and shareholders at Pandora. I hope I see better ads, though. And finally, this is the announcement about the Local Maximum. In a few days, I will have completed the first of what are some of my major goals for the sabbatical, which is to build a website or portal for the Local Maximum. I'm pretty happy with how it's coming along. We've got some search features, and this is going to be helpful, like for me, and I hope it's helpful for the rest of you, where it's going to be really quick and easy to search for different things, and the episodes are going to be organized in different ways, so you can kind of, you know, browse what you're looking for a lot more easily. It's easier on the eye than my blog post is. Version one will still be pretty basic. Like I said, we're not going to have commenting. We're not going to have a forum. But I want to see what the results are, and I want to get some feedback and see how people are using it. So this episode number 33, will be the last episode that's posted on my blog at maxsklar.com/blog. It'll be the last episode spread on social media through that blog, but hopefully it'll also be the first episode spread on social media through the new website. So that's exciting. There's also four outstanding guests in my pipeline with discussion on data engineering, Bitcoin, audio and music and management. So definitely look out for all that, and let me know what you think when the website comes out. That'll be at localmaxradio.com. So check that out in a few days, and have a great week, everyone. That's the show. If you want to contact me, the host, or ask a question that I can answer on the show, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. This show is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. If you want to keep up, remember to follow the Local Maximum on one of these platforms and to follow my Twitter account at MaxSklar. Have a great week.
Feel the power.
I don't care what you say. You're going to see me shine.
They pointed out in that article, and I've completely lost my train of thought.
In the podcast?
Yeah. Oh God, where was I going with that?
I'll edit it out. If you find it, I'll.
Oh yeah, I had a complete brain fart. It had something to do with. Oh, I know what it is now. Okay, yeah. So.